Welcome to episode 43 of A Positive Podcast. In today's episode, we are beginning a two-part series on the topic of ADHD. Our first part is with Mrs. Ida Schottenstein, who is an ADHD coach, and the second one is with David Becker, who also works as a therapist with people who struggle with ADHD. I think you're going to find these two-part series to be quite insightful and quite helpful. And I'm very excited to hear from all of you the things that you've gained and learned. Today's episode is sponsored by a friend, a previous client, and a fellow shlucha who wishes to remain anonymous. These are her own words that she put together in appreciation and wanted me to share with all of you. And here it goes. I'm very open about my own struggles with ADHD, and I see that there are many people who live with ADHD and the struggles that come along with it. When I heard that there was an upcoming episode on the topic of ADHD, I knew I wanted to sponsor it. I believe that we have so much power in our minds to create new opportunities, expand capacities, make new choices that will enable us to live to the fullest with whatever Hashem has endowed us with. I believe very strongly in the power of coaching. And I hope that this episode will open up others to the opportunities and benefits that come along with working with a coach. As well, each month or quarter, I allocate part of my small business, the proceeds that I get, to an organization that benefits others. And in addition, as to my own personal Hakaras HaTov to you, Razel, as a previous client, and for your daily Instagram stories that I enjoy over my morning macchiato, I'm so grateful. And I know that so many people have benefited from your podcast. So with much respect for what you do, and not just talking the talk, but walking the walk and breaking stigmas and providing education and empowerment through the lens of a mental health specialist imbued with Hasidus perspective, you are making people feel less alone. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to co-sponsor this important podcast episode. Wow, thank you so much for these kind words, as well as your sponsorship. These kind of messages, and specifically when somebody reaches out and wants to actually go ahead and sponsor or partially sponsor a episode, it means so much to me personally. And it literally helps us make this, keep this podcast going. So if you would like to sponsor an upcoming episode, we have quite a few sponsorships opportunities available. And you can sponsor an episode in honor of a birthday or a special occasion of a loved one, or just because you enjoy this podcast and you want to be part of it. You can reach out to me through my website, apositivecoach.com, or you can email me at razel@jewishpbd.com. So let's get right into today's episode. And I think that you're all going to really learn a lot. So sit back, relax, and be ready to grow. So first of all, Ida, thank you so much for being here and being willing.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and being willing to come on to the podcast, especially as another podcast host. I know you appreciate the value that all of our different guests bring to the topics. And so I really appreciate it. Let's get right into it, Ida. I know that you're trained as an ADHD coach. Can you tell us a little bit about what that training behind that is? And what is the goal of an ADHD coach, and how can they be helpful for their clients?
Okay. Yes, sure. So the training is, I have a coaching certification for ADHD, which is similar to life coaching, only that the focus is specifically on ADHD. I'm also a therapist. So while I was doing my master's in mental health counseling with a focus on ADD, I also did my coaching certification. So I was kind of on a dual track. And the difference really between a therapist and a coach is really that a coach provides like tools for, you know, time management just to navigate like day-to-day life. Whereas a therapist is more concerned with like the emotions, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. Let's unpack this, you know? So that's essentially, you know, what I do. And it's nice to, I could be the coach and the client at the same time and really put myself in the shoes of the person that I'm working with, which is really helpful.
Great. Thank you so much for that. Today, I actually really want to discuss ADHD. I find that whenever I actually talk about ADHD,
talk about it on Instagram or put it in my stories. There's so much feedback. It seems that so many people are struggling with this, if not within themselves, then with a loved one, a spouse or a child. And I think everyone knows what it is at this point. Like, I don't have to describe it because I think at this point, we all know what ADD is, what ADHD looks like. And if people want to learn a little bit more about the science behind it, my husband did a great podcast with Dr. Craig Heacock, which is a different episode that we can talk, that people can go back and find in the show notes. But I want today's conversation to focus more on what we can do for people with that struggle with ADHD, like tools, tips, and beyond that, because it really seems to be difficult for people to manage. And what I'm learning is that the best thing for ADHD is medication. It's like the front line and it's the go-to solution for many people is what I'm seeing. And those people that find it to work, it's like magic for them almost. They are different people when they're on their medication and they find it to be very helpful. At the same time, there are those people that are not able to manage the medication. Like it doesn't work for them. The side effects are too much for them. It's really hard for them to take the medication. I also want to say that just finding the right medication is like literally like a shidduch. It's, you have to trial and error with many different types of medications, but it does seem like medication does help people. Like it's the best way to help people. But first of all, do you agree with that? Do you see that as well? Is that your consensus? I'm just curious for your feedback on that.
So it's not so black and white to me because every person has a different experience with ADHD, assuming they have it, right? So for some people, medication is the standard and they can't live without it. But let's say some people have ADD, but their lifestyle supports those symptoms, right? Maybe like their work life is just dynamic. They could move around a lot. They're entrepreneurs, so they don't necessarily have to be in one place, you know, all day or at an office sitting behind a desk. So I'm reluctant to say that any one thing is the magic thing. It's such a dynamic, you know, process. And I think medication is one of the things that from people that I've spoken to who have said that it helped them, it sounds like it was a game changer, like it changed their life. But usually it was in addition to other things. It wasn't just the medication, you know, because, you know, pills don't teach skills. You can't just take a pill and expect life to change overnight. It's usually supplemented by either coaching or, you know, time management skills being, you know, worked into the schedule. So something else, but I think medication, it's important to at least consider it. This is my own opinion because it's safe. You know, there's a lot of research behind it. If you're looking at the risks versus the benefits, of taking or not taking medication, we see that people who have ADD and need medication, but let's say they're afraid of it, you know, there's a higher likelihood of so many like dangerous things, like getting into car accidents, you know, being distracted while driving, drug abuse, you know, alcohol abuse, all of these things, even for a parent, like to know if they're afraid of medication, they also need to consider the fear of a child becoming, you know, depressed, anxious, addicted to a substance. So again, it's a risk versus benefit.
That's a very good point. That's a really good point because what happens is with like other things, what happens is if the pain's too great, they'll look for things to self-medicate. And that's where it really gets tricky. And that's where medication can be preventative as well. So I think there are many myths and misconceptions surrounding ADHD. I'd love to hear from you some of those myths that people have about ADD or ADHD. And it's interesting because, you know, I was reading up on this and apparently now people do not use the term ADD as much. It's more about, it's kind of more the diagnosis is more ADHD. Is that correct?
So it's very much interchangeable. The reason I like to use ADD is because often, you know, in a child, you'll see the hyperactive side. You know, there are different presentations. You know, some people have ADHD, hyperactive, some people have impulsive and attentive, like predominantly those things. But for the most part, an adult with ADD, and I'll use ADD just to, you know, for clarity, but The hyperactivity is a cognitive hyperactivity. So you're not seeing it. It's internal. And when someone with ADD is going, let's say, to a therapist, they might not appear hyperactive. And they might not even realize that they have hyperactivity because it's in their mind. It's like a mind hyperactive. So that's why I think ADD helps us understand that even though the person like doesn't show hyperactive, it's on the inside.
Going on inside, internally,
yeah,
in their head.
Yeah.
That hyperactivity is not, let's say, cartwheeling all over your floor. It's more like in their head. They're literally, their thoughts are just going a mile a minute.
Right. Sometimes they talk faster and they'll, or they'll, you know, you'll see the distractibility, the impulsivity, but it's not like super noticeable in them.
Right. The surface, yeah. So let's go back for a second to the myths and misconceptions around ADD. I think that there are the basic one that I can think of that, you know, I hear from a lot of teachers that mean well, but just don't have that knowledge and understanding of ADD or ADHD, is that if they only tried harder, they would be able to do better. They need to work harder on trying to focus better. Or, and they'll say things like, well, when it's this top, like I have teachers that will say, well, I noticed that in this topic, she's excellently able to focus really well. But then when it comes to another topic, you know, her head's down and she's not focusing and not paying attention. So if she's able to focus in that, why can't she use that same focus and use that in this subject? And what we know is that obviously if they're interested in the topic, so obviously they're going to be almost hyper-focused. But I'm curious if you could share with us some of those myths and misconceptions around ADD.
Well, the first one that you mentioned about interest versus attention, like I think that that ADD is really a misnomer. It's not named right. It's not an attention deficit. It's an interest deficit. You know, it's an executive function disorder. It's about managing your attention, not whether or not you have attention to begin with. So I think there's a myth that that people with ADD just need to try harder, you know, like you said earlier. And the saddest part about that is the more you try to concentrate, the less you are able to. So the teachers who tell the students, try harder, you know, pay better attention, are actually accomplishing the opposite of what they're trying to accomplish. The harder you work, the less you're able to absorb the information because there's stress. You know, there's a stressful feeling in, I can't do this, why can't I do this? You know, a lot of people with ADD know they have self-awareness. They know that they know what they're supposed to be doing. And there's just like this feeling, like a lack of understanding of, you know, why can't I do it? You know, I know what I need to do, but I can't do it. And again, like this is sometimes even harder for the family members of people with ADHD, especially spouses of people with ADD, because they don't understand. Like I told my spouse to do this. They're not doing this. It's so simple, but somehow they can get all this other stuff done. And that can cause a lot of strain in all relationships, teacher, sure, student, parent, child, and spousal, and et cetera. Yeah.
That's a good one to start with. Any other ones coming up as well that you can think of?
I think a lot of people think that we outgrow it. And again, maybe the hyperactive part, you know, externally, but, or that there's a cure. And that can be detrimental because if we're thinking that one day we'll outgrow it, we're not trying to manage it. And if we learn that this is a lifetime diagnosis, it's not going away. We just need to learn tools for management, and it can be wonderful for us if we do that. You know, there's a way to channel it. And anyone who knows someone well with ADD knows that there's this creative outlet that once, you know, it's channeled, they can do incredible things. But then there's the other side of that, which is, you know, the self-esteem issues that come with it and the, you know, the challenges that they face as children, especially adults today. Well, luckily adults today grew up with some awareness, but maybe anyone over the age of, let's say, 40, probably had less of that, less understanding of their condition. Usually they're diagnosed later in life. So now they're not just dealing with ADHD, with ADD, they're dealing with comorbidities like anxiety, depression, you know, like social anxiety, because they felt misunderstood, or maybe they stopped listening in a conversation and they were afraid to tell this person, hey, I totally spaced out. Can you just repeat what you said? You know, it's embarrassing to say that. Oh, well, what if they think I'm dumb? What if they think I don't care? you know, there's all those like internal dialogues happening that can make it very hard for someone to channel it, you know, effectively. I would say like a lot of, there's a misconception or a myth that they don't care, that someone with ADD just doesn't care, or that, you know, somehow intelligence is correlated with ADD. It's not, but very often people do believe that they're not smart or they're, you know, they're not capable, but that's not the case. It's not, I don't see it as a deficiency. I just see it as a different brain. We have a different brain and we just need to learn about it. In the same way someone with a gluten sensitivity just needs to learn about how to, you know, support that diet and how to, you know, what do I have to do differently? There's nothing wrong with me if I have a gluten sensitivity. I just need to eat different foods and I'll be fine. And I don't think it's different with ADD. Yeah, there's so many myths. I mean, that they're lazy. A lot of people think they're lazy. Definitely not the case.
That's true. Because I've seen that. I've seen that ADD can be like a superpower. Like I know for my husband specifically, he can do so many projects at the same time. Like he can juggle so many different things. And that would like overwhelm me, like an average person who doesn't struggle with ADD. And then the small things sometimes will be the ones that like are like, oh, that's too much. Now it all became, you know, too big to handle.
Okay, everyone, just a quick interruption here for a very important announcement. The Positive Podcast is powered by OKClarity.com. OKClarity.com is the place for any Jew. No matter how frum, how religious you are, if you're looking to find a top-notch therapist, a psychiatrist, a coach, or a nutritionist, you can do that here, and it's completely free. So OKClarity.com has professionals that are vetted, and they have an extensive experience working with the Jewish community. So if you are in the market for a therapist or a coach or a nutritionist or a psychiatrist or the like, and if you are a therapist, coach, psychiatrist, or provider or nutritionist, you should go yourself and check them out at okclarity.com to see if you want to be listed there as well. I get a lot of reach outs from people asking me for a good therapist. And this website, I have checked it out with some of my friends and some professionals that I trust, and they've given me their approval. It's a great website to be able to find a good therapist, a good psychiatrist. So check it out, okclarity.com. In addition, if you have WhatsApp, OKClarity has an amazing WhatsApp group, and it's a status that has lots of followers, and their WhatsApp is a free way to improve your mental health. And they post great humor, so you'll laugh too. And if you have WhatsApp, you just shoot them a message to 917-426-1495. Again, that's 917-426-1495. I'll include that as well in the show notes so that you can go ahead and find it yourself. So smash those links. You won't regret it. Thanks for listening. Now back to our show.
But I've noticed that sometimes it comes along with a learning disability, or it comes along with or maybe that causes the learning disability. I'm not sure if that's the case. I'm wondering about that. But when they have an additional like language processing issue, or they have on top of it, really bad anxiety alongside that, that's when it becomes really difficult to manage the ADD. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, actually, when you have, you know, when someone goes in for an evaluation, one of the first things they do is rule out any learning disabilities, because very often ADD will mimic a learning disability, but it's not a learning disability. It's a difference in the way that people process information. But sometimes people will go in for an ADD diagnosis and they'll discover they have something like Erlen syndrome, which is like a reading based deficiency where they can't disability where they can't see the words properly. So it's not that they're not paying attention. It's just that they're not, like, they have a visual issue with, you know, when it comes to reading. So yes, definitely that needs to be ruled out, which is why I think it is important to get evaluated to know what's going on.
Right. But let's go back for a second. Just, I want to go back to this idea for a second, because people that struggle with this, and they can do these, they can juggle so many things that are interesting to them and they're excited about and so many different projects. And yet it seems like they get overwhelmed with the small stuff, and that's like what sets them off. And it seems so contradictory. It doesn't make sense almost. It's like you're managing so many big projects, and yet this small little thing is, what do you think's happening there? Why is that happening?
So because it's interest-based, usually the stuff that are harder for them to do are things that don't interest them a lot. So that's what's going on. I do think, here's another myth. I think that even unless someone with ADD is in the zone, right? There's usually an undercurrent of stress and like a feeling of lack of alignment. So even if someone with ADD, you know, even if they get a ton done during the day, right? They were super productive. Very often at the end of the day, they'll feel like they didn't get much done, or they didn't feel like the day was successful, which actually can happen for several reasons. And I could share one of them. The most prevalent one is something called procrastivity. Somebody with ADD will generally, they are productive, but they're not productive in an intentional way. So they'll be doing a bunch of stuff that interests them, but not the stuff that they had to be doing. Like, for example, the boring thing that needed to get done. And if they can only figure out a way to do both, right? The boring stuff and the interesting stuff, where at the end of the day, they feel like I was able to confront this challenge of doing this. I mean, filing my taxes, or, you know, paying the bills, or, you know, making sure my credit score stays, you know, decent, at least, you know, if they could figure out a way to manage that, usually those feelings of stress, you know, are less, but they're usually there. There's an emotional dysregulation that happens beneath the surface. Again, with tools, it can be addressed. It doesn't go away completely, but it can be managed.
So we don't understand necessarily why people that have ADD have a hard time focusing, and then they can go and they're hyper-focused on a specific subject or a specific project, which may not be the most important thing that we think or even what they think, but this can throw, you know, spouses off or teachers off, friends. And again, like we spoke about before, if you can focus on this, then why can't you fuse the same and focus on something that needs to get done? So how would you explain this dynamic to a spouse that of somebody who's struggling with this, or to a teacher that's listening, and what can they do to help support that person that's struggling with ADD or ADHD?
Right. So there's something called the bystander effect. Something I learned about in when I studied psychology, and I thought it was very interesting, and I feel like it's a great way to understand what the dynamics are with a couple where one of them has ADD, the other one doesn't. So the bystander effect is essentially, you know, there's somebody who is in distress and needs help, and there's several people around that can help them, but no one's helping that person. And I believe that this is actually something that really happened. And then they've got this term from that incident, where there were so many people who could have helped this person, but everyone thought the other person was going to do it, so no one did it. And I think that when it comes to, you know, the relationship, if let's say the person with ADD, the spouse with ADD has, I don't know, a doctor's appointment, right? They're going to go let's say 95% of the time, they'll show up to that doctor's appointment because they're fully accountable, right? If no one else, they made the appointment, so there's that commitment, and they'll likely follow through more so than if they make a personal commitment to themselves, like, oh, I'm going to exercise tomorrow morning, right? It's a lot harder to do because there's not that. Two things. Number one is external motivation, like some type of commitment that they made to someone else. And also that they know that there's not someone else who's going to step in and do things for them. The minute that happens, there's like this enabling process, and it's very disempowering. And I think this is the one mistake I see most often, because I do work with families sometimes where one will overcompensate, right? Because the other one is just not, you know, following through on their promises, which is very difficult. It's I would say it's as difficult, if not more, for the spouse who doesn't have ADD, because there's confusion around what's going on. There's a feeling of isolation, like, why don't they care? There's almost like a mourning of this life that that they thought they would have that they don't, they no longer have, because they're kind of reconciling with this reality. That's probably not going to change. So I think, I guess long answer to your question is, when there is a sense of accountability and they believe that if they don't do it, nobody else is going to do it, then there's a higher likelihood of, I mean, it's so different in each relationship, but just thinking of an example, let's just say carpool. If they know that no one else is picking their kids up from school, then they're going to, maybe they'll be a little late, but they'll go. Whereas if it's the dishes and it's an expectation, but they know they can get away with not doing it because maybe somebody else will do it or the cleaning lady will come the next day, then there might be a little argument going on there.
Right. So what I'm hearing you say is that it's a fine line for a spouse or a parent of being able to empower their loved one or enable them. And that's a really important distinction that needs to be made. And in each case, it looks different. But it's really important to be asking ourselves, okay, so in this case, if I didn't do this for this person, what would happen here? And I mean, like, children leaving their lunches at home, right? I have always struggled with that one. Like, I don't understand how parents will say, yeah, they're just going to have to be hungry. I couldn't, like, I couldn't do that to my child. But like, sometimes they need to learn it. They need to learn that feeling so that next time they'll remember, because that will help them remember it. But it almost seems like it's really challenging to actually follow through on that.
Very challenging. And that's why it's sometimes harder for the parent or the spouse, because that's such a great example. Like, your kid left their lunch at school. It's your responsibility as a parent to make sure your children are fed and, you know, safe. And so what I have suggested in the past is not let them be hungry, but maybe work around them so they don't know that you're helping them, but you are. So you can call the school and say, just wondering, my daughter forgot her lunch. I'm not driving back to school to bring it to her. Is there like a sandwich that you can give her that probably doesn't taste very good, but at least she's not starving, you know?
Right. So it's stepping in where we can, but like letting them, I think this idea is like throughout all parenting, this is not even just with ADD. It's really this idea that we have to allow our children to fall and not be there to catch them, and actually allow them to get a bump and a scrape and then say, okay, next time I really need to put on my helmet. Next time I need to really think this through. Now, the problem is that with people that have ADD, sometimes they have to learn this lesson many times until it actually really kind of sticks.
Right.
And that's really hard to witness.
It's hard to witness. It's hard to experience. And that's where, you know, help comes in, but not the kind of help, not the enabling kind of help. You know, getting a coach is empowering because there's accountability. The coach is following up with the person, or a therapist, or actually sometimes even a family member, but only when done collaboratively. So it's not one person saying, you've got to do this, why aren't you doing this? It's okay, let's sit down. Let's just take couples, for example. Just being able to share each of their experiences living with the other in a non-judgmental way. Like, what's it like for me when I feel like I'm drowning and no one's coming to save me, or when, you know, something is going wrong and I wish I had someone who can help me and I just feel so lost. Like, it's really, they're all I statements. It's about me. It's not about blame. It's not about pointing fingers. So just having an open conversation. And when a spouse has ADD, I mean, it's tough because they're sometimes they're not listening, right? So a tip that I will offer is to go on a short walk, like a daily, let's say literally just a 7-minute walk, and, you know, just get the conversation out of the way through that. Because if you're sitting across a table and they have their phone on the table, I mean, you know, it's very low likelihood of them absorbing all the information that you're trying to share.
Yeah. Well, I find that ADD, people that struggle with ADD or ADHD end up needing to do two things at one time. So a lot of times I will tell my child's teacher ahead of time and say, it may look like she's not paying attention. It may seem to you that she's not listening to you, but actually she's ripping little pieces of paper. That's her way of staying focused. It's doing something with her hands so she can keep busy. I've also noticed that a lot of them move a lot, like their feet, they're tapping their feet a lot. They have to have some kind of movement happen to help their brain almost work as well. And I think that teachers get annoyed by that, but, you know, and I'm wondering what you think about this. What are some things that actually the teachers that might be listening can do to help their students that are struggling with these, with focus and attention and not moving around? What are some things that teachers can actually do to help their students?
So it's a challenging question because it's hard to be a teacher in a classroom, period. And then that coupled with kids who have trouble focusing makes it even harder. And I've spoken to teachers about this. And what I have found is the more dynamic teachers who turn class into a storytelling environment are much more effective with kids who have ADD. So I think that what the teacher needs to know is bring the information to life. How can you do that? Can they act out a story if it's history? Maybe math is a little bit more challenging, but like, let's pull out, you know, pencils and erasers. Let's just make this a dynamic process. And also regarding like kids who fidget, look, not, you can't do that in every class, right? Some classes require, you know, sitting in a desk for some period of time. I think this is actually a tip that applies really anywhere, and I love that people with ADD are such great teachers for the rest of the world because, you know, they experience the same symptoms as neurotypicals, but just, you know, more pronounced. So everyone's going to be inattentive sometimes. Everyone's going to get bored sometimes. So our tools will help everyone. So one of the things I like is called like a double love activity. So you're pairing up two things, that two tasks, but that are complementary to each other. So for example, like I will never read and let's say cook at the same time because both require some level of mental energy where if I'm actually reading, not a recipe book, something different, I'm going to lose focus and I'll forget the eggs, right? And whatever I'm making. So with kids in a classroom, you can literally have, so usually a physical, like it's like a physical activity with a mental activity, those go well together. So walking and listening, you know, to a podcast, let's say, or, you know, let's say doing jumping jacks while you memorize something. Maybe that's not something that most people do, but like I heard one of my clients say that they'll do like push-ups or sit-ups with a piece of paper in their hand. I never tried that, so I don't know what that's like, but even like squats, maybe that's easier. And what's great about that is you're doing two good things. I mean, you're getting the exercise, which is another very effective tool for ADHD. It's actually crucial. And it's so hard because the thing that you need to do is really hard to do for someone with ADD because of the impulsive tendencies and being so sometimes the presence, you know, we all know it's good to be present, right? It's nice to be in the present moment and, you know, and fully absorbing it. But for someone with ADD, they have something called a present bias, which means sometimes they're so absorbed in the now that they forget about other things that are important.
That's so fascinating.
Isn't it?
No, I just wanted to say that I've noticed that, and I don't know if this is an ADD quality or challenge, but our brains desire to do two things at once. So I noticed that kids will be watching the game, let's say a football game on the screen, and then on their iPod playing a different game. And I'll always tell my children that actually it's not good for your brain to get accustomed to that. Like try to, if you're focusing on one thing, enjoy the football game. And I think with the phone now, especially since it's changed, so you can watch a YouTube video on one screen and still check your text messages as you're doing it, our brains are becoming accustomed to doing this. And And I'm curious, do you think people with this ADD struggle also have, is it something they desire more than a regular person? Is it something, I'm noticing that as well. I'm just curious what your thoughts on that are.
Is that they're desiring
to do the multitasking, to do the two things at once. So like you said, if you want to talk to them and you go on a walk with the person, so now they're walking and they're able to do a physical activity and also talk at the same time, fine. But do you notice that they also, this is something that they, in general, they don't want to be just doing one thing at a time. They need to be doing a few things at a time.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that I've heard is that it's very hard for someone who has ADD to be alone with themselves. There's this feeling of, I don't want to confront the reality that I'm facing, which is that I can't be fully present in the way I want to. And so it's a distraction from themselves usually, which it can, and this is not with everyone. This is just the story I've heard quite a bit. Actually, I heard a great one from Rabbi Tversky, where he said, I was just so consumed with doing so many things that when I had chronic pain and had to go to these hot springs, and this woman who worked there said that I have to be in there for 20 minutes. Then I went in there, and after 5 minutes, I just needed to do something. I couldn't sit. And then he said, that's when he realized like the self-esteem issues, like he didn't want to confront himself. That's a big challenge that many people with ADD face, is confronting a reality that they are reluctant to accept.
So keeping busy is distracting them. So keeping busy is what's distracting them and from doing that.
Keeping busy is in some cases, and I'm mentioning it because I do find that this is not just with ADD. I think it's happening a lot, especially in the environment that many kids are being raised in today, where there's constant distraction. I think one of the things that can be very effective, and I would say in coaching, but really more so in therapy, is just acceptance. Acceptance of the reality that someone with ADD is facing, which is maybe more challenging than neurotypicals, but it also comes with many gifts. And anyone who's been through something really hard knows that, you know, the struggle is there, but there's also so much that can be drawn out from the struggle that can help, that enable them to live more meaningful and wholesome lives. So I think acceptance is a huge factor here, and not just with the person who has it, but with the family members as well.
Absolutely. I think when we're able to accept ourselves, that's when we can find peace. More, you know, you can't do two things at once in regard. Our brain needs to be, if you're busy fighting something, you can't make peace with it and learn tools for it. You have to have a level of, okay, well, I struggle with this. When you're busy right. saying, no, this is not me. I don't struggle with this. You can't deal with it. It's true for anything that we deal with. That's a very true point. Acceptance is where the healing can begin. It's like the starting point.
Right.
I also want to add that teachers, you know, the teachers that I've seen over the years that get it are the best teachers. Meaning I've had teachers where the children have a choice of what they want to sit on in their classroom. They have these balls. They have these different stations that they're moving from constantly, and it requires a lot more prep on the teacher's part, because you cannot just do, you have to prepare four different ways, and that's the real challenge. And I think our teachers are not supported enough, and they're not paid enough to make it worth their time and energy. And that's, I think, also part that we can really support our teachers, we would see more results in the classroom as well. I want to move for a second to back, because we touched on this a little bit, but being married to somebody who has ADHD or ADD, and while maybe the person themselves are more neurotypical, it can be quite challenging. And like we talked about, it can feel very lonely and it's just really, really challenging. So what would be some go-to tips or tools to help that person navigate being married to someone whose spouse has ADD?
Could you ask the question again? I'm sorry. I just wanted to.
Sure. Being married to somebody who has ADHD, and perhaps the person, the other spouse, is more neurotypical, and it can be quite challenging. So what would be some tools or tips that you can you know, suggest to help them navigate being married to somebody who has ADD or ADHD?
Okay. Thank you. So I would say first and foremost is understanding their inner world through communication, through conversation. Again, like just having a conversation about what's it like for you? Like, what's life like for you on, you know, what on the inside? And then them listening to you as well on a walk would be great, because then there's that movement happening. I think that couples counseling is important, and it can be helpful, even though it can be hard for one of the spouses to do it. I think it can be helpful in them understanding their own experience and how it contributes to the dynamics in the relationship that are causing harm. And in that conversation, I think it's important to acknowledge like micro traumas. I think a lot of people with ADD don't realize that there are little things that happened in their childhood that they maybe wrote off, but that are significant and are impacting their relationship when they get married, like teachers who made them feel dumb for asking a question on something that they just, you know, the teacher just taught. I would say encourage two things. So for the person who has the ADD, I would say always under promise. There's a tendency to over promise and under deliver. And that can be very hard for the spouse of the person with ADD. And then I would say for the spouse of the person who has ADD is to lower expectations. And I don't mean this like in a negative way, meaning like just let go and do everything. I mean, just remember that, you know, it's challenging for them. And the more you can outsource whatever it is you're able to, the more likely you are for, you know, things to go smoothly. So when you have couples who are running a business together, that can be very challenging. But couples who do, and that happens a lot because a lot of people with ADD are also entrepreneurs, is to just outsource whatever you can and focus on the things you do best. And through that, hopefully you'll be empowered to do more, because it's just kind of like mitzvah gereres mitzvah. If you do one thing, then it'll lead to another. So also creating micro goals, like a lot of people will just have goals, not realizing that if they don't meet them, it's discouraging. And then that will perpetuate that those like negative feelings like, oh, I can't do anything. Whereas for example, let's say, you know, my goal is to start exercising. I'm going to like break that down into much smaller and more attainable goals. So my goal is going to be put on my sneakers in the morning. And even though it seems like too easy or kind of like a cop out, but that actually is your best chance at getting the workout done, is just creating this goal of putting on your sneakers or when work needs to get done, right? The goal should be go to desk, sit at desk for 5 minutes, because I'm not going to get out of that. Like I can't, there's no excuse that I can concoct in my mind for not being able to walk to my desk. So, but, and then once you're sitting at your desk or once you have your sneakers on or once you're in the kitchen, it, then it's more likely to get done. So micro goals, lowering expectations, having conversations about the internal experience. Those are like the basics, but
right.
And acceptance, I would say acceptance.
The big piece. Absolutely. I think that's interesting that you mentioned about counseling. I don't think people ever think about that because they may think, oh, it's his problem. He needs to go deal with it. It's her problem. She needs to deal with it. When you go into couple counseling, you can kind of together with the therapist kind of come to some kind of resolution together and some kind of ways forward that you may not have been able to prior. And together you have that more of that accountability and you have the ability to really communicate even more effectively sometimes.
And really with any issue, not even related to ADD, is that when a couple goes to counseling, you know, it's very much not about what's wrong with one person. It's about how the dynamics between them affect their relationship. So it's right. Not different with someone who has ADD.
Right. So this is something that I've heard from different people before, is that they'll tell me that I don't know if I'm ADD or ADHD, but I have these tendencies. And they may have some ADD tendencies, but it doesn't seem to upend and negatively affect their entire life. So I guess, does a person need to go and get, my question is two part. Is it crucial that adults or children that struggle with these tendencies or symptoms actually get a formal diagnosis of ADD or ADHD? How important is it to get, let's say, a proper eval? Where does one do that? Is it enough to have like an online self-test? Is it more important to actually really do a full neuropsych eval? What would you say about that?
Right. So I think it is very important. And I think for several reasons it's important. First of all, to receive a diagnosis, just by definition, the ADD symptoms have to interfere with a person's level of functioning, meaning it's causing distress in one's life. Otherwise there is not a diagnosis, right? And I'm not gonna say there is no diagnosis, but generally speaking, it's gotta interfere with functioning. And if it's interfering with functioning, don't you wanna know what's actually going on? Like I had a couple of weeks ago, I had pain in my arm and I didn't know what it was. And, I kind of let it slide. I was busy. I had too much going on. It wasn't like terrible. I was still able to write and lift heavy things. But then I was talking to my sister and I was just telling her my arm hurts. And she said, why don't you just go check out what it is? Like, how would that hurt you? And I went and I had an x-ray. It turned out I have tennis elbow and I don't even play tennis, but it was good to know. Like I kind of cleared it up and now I know what it is and I know how to navigate it. And so I have that clarity. Wouldn't you want to know if, it's not just depression or it's not just anxiety, or it's not just that you can't, nurture social relationships, or that you can't connect to people, or that you can't have a great, relationship with whoever it is. Wouldn't it be good to know, this is ADD. It's a neurodevelopmental disorder that I've had since childhood. And that explains so much. So I just think it's just for the sake of clarity, why not get the evaluation? It is time consuming, but in the grander scheme of things, I think that it's certainly worthwhile. It takes a couple hours. It can be expensive. So for people who are, struggling and just from a budget perspective, it's just a lot to spend. There is a questionnaire that's free online that, and I could send you the link for it. It's just like a preliminary questionnaire. You can just it's a symptom checklist that gives you at least more of an idea of whether you have ADD tendencies or not. So yes, I think it is important to get evaluated.
Okay. And how would one go about doing that? Does that begin for a child with their pediatrician? Give us a little bit about how one would do that.
Yeah. So it can be at the pediatrician's office. And a pediatrician will normally be able to refer the parent to someone who does evaluations. And sometimes schools offer evaluations, psych evaluations. So I would say, for someone who's concerned is to find out with the school, find out with your doctor, even an adult who's looking to get evaluated. I would say, ask your doctor. And then there's also this great resource. It's a website. I think it's Attitude, ADD. ITUD.com. And there are resources there too, where you can find in your area someone who does evaluations.
Great. That's a good added tip there. Okay. So I also want to say that it's an interesting thing that you said, because not only do we want to know what we're dealing with, but like half of the healing happens when you know what you're dealing with. It's interesting. If you look at TED Talks and on ADD and people that struggle with it, literally, I'm always left wanting when I finish these videos, because they basically describe how they have their symptoms and they struggle, and then they finally got the diagnosis, and now they know and they understand themselves better. And now, okay, so tell us how you're managing it. Like what? But yet it seems like you said, just the fact that they got that information, that knowledge, now they're able to manage their diagnoses, and they're able to kind of learn tools. But it's not even about so much about what they're doing as much as it's, like you said, knowing about it, then comes that idea of acceptance. And then you can start to really be able to, really deal with it. What else did I want to ask you? Just looking at my questions here for a minute. Okay, so as an ADHD or ADD coach, and have you seen people find support through coaching? Can you give us an example or a story or two that you had experience with clients?
Yeah. One thing that I see often is that clients will usually come when things are not great, which is fairly typical. Like, people will go to therapy when they're dealing with a crisis, which makes sense. You know, when things are good, why would you get help? And I think that something I like to share, even though it's a little bit negative, is, but I feel like it's a bit of a wake-up call, kind of like when you hear a story that happened to someone and you feel like, oh, it could happen to me. You want to take precaution to make sure that you're in good shape. So if somebody, you know, whether it's a car and practicing safe driving, or, you know, somebody lost a lot of money through investments, or so you're going to be more careful with your, you know, with your finances. So I think what the narrative or the picture I like to paint for someone who has ADD tendencies, but they're not at the point of crisis, is, and this is, I share this with clients, but usually I don't have to really, because they're at that point, but I just want to encourage people to get the help before the crisis hits, is to tell them what would happen if they just remained as they are, right? Let's just assume that you're not going to do anything about your ADD. You're just going to, you know, work through it, deal with the consequences. What will happen is you're going to take everything personally. You're going to be super reactive because you likely won't. And this is not everybody. This is just kind of sort of like a generalized overview, but it's what we see often is, you know, you'll be reactive because you won't be emotionally regulated. You might, you know, snap at someone for the wrong reasons. You'll become disorganized. You're going to forget to pay bills and your credit score might plummet. You know, you'll forget to schedule doctor's appointments, which might end up in, you know, affecting your health. You might end up driving and being inattentive and maybe end up in a fender bender, God forbid, and then have to spend thousands of dollars on repairs, which, by the way, I mean, it's much more expensive to have untreated or undiagnosed ADD than to have a diagnose. You know, this is prevention, but I mean, there's so many things like that can happen if you don't get proactive help. That, don't you want to mitigate that? You know, like, don't you want to not feel overwhelmed all the time? Don't you want to not have strained relationships? Don't you want to not feel lazy or unmotivated or, you know, directionless? And all of those things can be resolved. And there's different ways of resolving it. And it has to be a very individualized approach. But again, like, if you break it down into micro goals, if I tell you, if you have ADD right now and you're listening, chances are when this episode is over, you're not going to be getting an evaluation. You're going to want to. You're not going to be getting an evaluation. You're not going to be like suddenly calling every coach you know, because it's not realistic to do that for someone who has the tendencies that someone with ADD has. But if you say, dial the number of, or just go on to attitude.com, just click on those letters, right? Type them in and hit enter. You could do that. Once you hit enter and you're on that website, you'll start to see familiar articles pop up, like things that relate to you, things that you could connect to. And maybe you'll read one. Maybe you'll actually get so lost in it that you'll forget to do something else that's important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, which is obviously that's the next step, is, you know, eliminating procrastivity. Right? You don't want to be productive, but not with the thing that you were supposed to be doing. You want to be productive with what you had intended to do. But here I am rambling, but I think that if you can set one micro goal, one tiny little thing, think of something that you want to do differently. Think of something that's been holding you back, and don't make it too big that you'll know you'll get overwhelmed if you start to take that on, because it's not going to happen. The approach has to be strategic. So create a goal that you can't get out of. Now, I was just saying, with current clients, because I kind of answered the question for prospective clients, but I would say with clients, the first thing that I do is validate, because at the end of the day, that's what we all need is validation, you know, to feel like this is okay. Hashem created us this way, and we need to be self-compassionate, and people with ADD happen to be very compassionate people. They, you know, they're self-aware, they pick up, they live life in high definition. You know, it's like it's an HD life, like very, very attuned, unfortunately, more so to negative than positive, which is why gratitude is a very effective tool for change. And by the way, that could be a great one, is to just take a piece of paper and write the three things you're grateful for. Also, so small, like seems insignificant, but it's really not. I could tell you from my own personal experience that it can be life-changing. So I would just validate and say, it's okay. This can be wonderful. You know, I have an ADD diagnosis. I was diagnosed at 27, and I went from feeling so scattered and feeling like I had a million things going on, but nothing was getting done, to channeling it into multi-role woman, which that's how the name was created, because I could never just be put in one box. I have many different things going on. So, and I was able to channel it, and I ended up doing different things. And then I incorporated the accountability. I did it with the podcast. My podcast partner is really good at keeping me accountable, and without her, I don't know that I would be able to do it. So I utilize the tools at my disposal, and I've changed, and I've done it in my own life. So I know that it can be done. Like, I'm not just preaching, I'm actually doing the work.
The lived experience is the most powerful. Absolutely. So that's so, I'm grateful that you were willing to share that, because I'm sure people listening are very moved by that as well. You know what I've noticed, and I'm wondering if you've noticed this as well. It seems that for ADD or ADHD, students have a really hard time in the school. It seems like once they are able to get past high school and graduate, and even in college, it's different because you get to choose the subject you want to go to or the classes that you need to take. It can be different. But once you step out of that box of what is expected from you and there's a uniform look to it, it seems like it's easier for them to manage, and they're able to flourish more and learn ways to, you know, be able to do better. So I've noticed that ADD people struggle with sleep. And so they have a hard time falling asleep, and then they'll fall asleep, so they need to sleep later. So if you need to be at school at 8:30 and you only fell asleep at 2 a.m, that's a problem. But if you're able to, okay, I'm going to work my job in a different way. I'm going to have different hours. I'm going to have different responsibilities. And now I think that's really challenging when you get married and you're a parent. I think women that struggle with ADD and then have to actually show up at 6 o'clock for a newborn, or get up at middle of the night multiple times feeding, that can be a real struggle as well. And I just want to put that out there. But at the same time, I feel like once we're out of the box of school, it seems to get a little bit easier. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the empowering them to feel that they're in charge of their own selves. So when you're working under someone, a lot of people with ADD end up getting fired often when they work for someone, because they have a hard time being told what to do. Being told what to do is almost like an insult. It feels like an insult, like, because they take things personally. So Brene Brown shared a story that happened with her husband, where he came home from work and he opened the fridge and said, "Oh wow, we're on empty here." And right away, because Brene Brown was diagnosed with ADD too, she said, "I'm a terrible wife. I can't stock the fridge." Like, she internalized all of that. So that's very common. So when you're being told by a boss, "Hey, why don't you do this?" That's very discouraging. And then it just perpetuates that cycle of like, "Oh, I can't do anything." And then first ends up creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. So being able to do it on their own, that's why a lot of people with ADD are entrepreneurs, and they work for themselves. And I would say for someone with ADD who does have a job and works under someone else, you know, one of the tools that can be helpful is to draw passion from it. So, you know, dopamine, we all hear this word dopamine, like this, you know, a neurotransmitter that's associated with ADD. And the reason that's important to mention is because it really, dopamine is, it's a learned system. It's not something like that is we're not born with certain interests, right? They develop over time. So if you love, I don't know, if you love anthropology, if you love art, art history, right? If you see something on art history, it'll get your dopamine, those chemicals going. But if you don't like art history, nothing will happen. So dopamine is related to something that interests you beforehand. And that's a very, very important thing to recognize, because for people, let's say, who have ADD, and there are certain responsibilities you can't get out of, you can use that as a hack. You can take advantage of the learned dopamine system to make your job more exciting. So for someone who's a teacher, that's what I was saying earlier, one of the tools a teacher that can be effective, not just for the students, but for the teacher himself or herself, is to bring it to life for them. How can I make this subject applicable to me in a way that I actually want to connect to it? And it's maybe easier said than done. And like you said earlier, it requires preparation, but doesn't it feel great to spend the time preparing? And again, with ADD, that can be hard. But then once you develop the interest, then you become more passionate about it. And then it's not about your boss anymore, you know, and you're less likely to internalize the negativity because you're enjoying it so much. It's not a, you know, it's not a sure bet, but it's certainly worth tapping into that.
I want to finish up with this final question. I don't know if I didn't send this question to you, so I'll edit this out. If you don't want to answer, you don't have to, but.
Okay, no problem.
Ask okay, anything. So what is something that you thought you knew really well or were definitely sure about with regard to any of the things we've discussed today, but after years of life experiences and years of working with people with ADD or your own experiences that you've changed your opinion on?
Ooh, okay. Something I thought I knew well, but I changed my opinion on, that we can't change. I think there's this notion of people remain the way they are and you can't put a square peg in a round hole, which to an extent is true in some cases, but I really believe that a person can change drastically for the better, or worse, but you know, hopefully it's always, we're always forward moving. Because I've seen it again, like the proof is in the pudding. All the things I'm doing today, I never in a million years thought I could do. And it's sometimes it's like shocking to me. And I think that it's been really great for my kids to watch a positive transformation happen, because now I'm seeing them totally tap into that. And that's the joy and that's the benefit of feeling empowered to change for the better and like not limiting yourself with your own self-limiting beliefs. Like, don't limit yourself, try the thing. And it's always better. It's always better to try than not try. Like, we always regret things that we didn't do more than things that we did do. So it's a big risk for someone with ADD to say, I don't understand what you just said. Like earlier, I asked you to ask me the question again. And that felt uncomfortable for me a little bit, because I didn't want you to think that I wasn't listening or that I didn't care. Like, it's all those same patterns, but I know that it's what I need to do despite the fact that it feels uncomfortable. And then I always find that people are compassionate. Like, they're not going to say, why are you asking me? Like, why are you telling me to ask, you know, to ask the question again? That's not usually what happens. People are, for the most part, gracious and open to understanding each other. We just have to be willing to be vulnerable enough to go through that. Like, I'm going to try this. I'm not a public speaker, but the school asked me to give a class to the middle school girls, so I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do the best I can and bring it alive as much as I can. And for the most part, it's been rewarding. So it's certainly worth a shot.
I think that's a really great point. That's a beautiful point and a great thing to end with as well. Again, asking for clarity, clarifying things is such an important thing to remember. And I think that's just such a really great tool to keep in mind. So
it could really empower people to have, like, you know, people can change and relationships can change. for the better drastically too. Like even someone who's going through a rough time in their relationship, whether or not it's because of ADD, that can also change drastically. So another thing to take note of.
Yeah. And that's such a good point to remember because, I can relate to what you said. I think that 10 years ago, I did not believe that people could change. Yeah. People just do the same thing over and over again. Nah, they really don't change. They can change.
Right.
They really can. And it's something that requires a lot of work, a lot of mindset shifting, but it can happen.
Right.
And that's something I wish for all of us all listening today. And I just want to thank Ida again for your time and for your wisdom. And that was wonderfully helpful.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you found it as insightful as I did and that you learned a thing or two. If you would like to share with me some of your thoughts or things that you learned or things that you'd like to add, please don't hesitate to reach out to me through my website, apositivecoach.com. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for part 2 coming up soon.